And welcome to this special episode of Mission Makers, brought to you from Davos, Switzerland, where I was lucky enough to be moderating a week of panels in the mountains at the Land Space Summit, which took place during the World Economic Forum earlier this year. It was a huge project, and I spent close to a year curating the programme for the summit, which was a gathering to collaborate on the most pressing issues of our current and future generations, converging the frontiers of technology and humanity to showcase the cultural essence of life in an immersive, elevated experience. We had some incredible speakers at our summit, from Deepak Chopra to the first African woman to pilot a spacecraft, Dr. Siam Proctor, and many other visionaries and thought leaders. I'll be sharing a few highlights from our panel discussions over the next few weeks, so stay tuned and let's dive straight into today's episode. How motorsports can impact the future of mobility with Lina Siep. Lina is the PR director for Nico Rosberg and for his Extreme E racing team, RXR. She's worked in the motorsports industry for several companies, including BMW Sauber F1, Panasonic Toyota Racing and McLaren Automotive, where she was the global PR manager. Lina is a highly sought-after thought leader in the field, and she contributes to articles to various publications in the industry, such as Paddock Magazine. She has a wide range of clients, including Porsche, Audi, Mercedes-AMG, and Jaguar Land Rover. So we begin with how she got into motorsports.
I was taken to the racetrack for the first time when I was about 12 years by my dad. I saw a race of German touring cars, and I was fascinated ever since. And then I started my career working for various teams, from Formula One to long-distance racing, Le Mans, 24 Hours Nürburgring, Touring Car Championships, and GT Sport. And now, in the past couple of years, I focused a bit more on electric racing, which also had to do with the fact that I wanted to give my career a more meaningful twist. After 15 years in the car industry and motorsport, I kind of felt that, you know, what I'm doing didn't create enough of an impact and didn't give me that purpose that I think some other speakers here mentioned is fueling them every day. And it was right at that moment that a guy came to me called Nico Rosberg. And he is, if some of you know him, he's a 2016 world champion in Formula One. And after he ended his career in motorsport as an active driver, he's turned to become a sustainability investor and entrepreneur, founding the Green Tech Festival, founding his own race team, Rosberg X Racing, focused entirely on battling climate change. And now here I am speaking about motorsport and sustainability, and really proud to be able to do so today.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Lina. It's amazing to have more women in motorsport that are committed to championing also one of the SDG initiatives of getting more a gender equality. And if anyone is wondering what my connection is to motorsport as well and why I'm up here talking about this, because I grew up racing cars and being a massive petrol head. And my journey changed slightly when I was 15 and I was diagnosed with dyspraxia, which is a motor coordination delay. But the problem was I already found what I was passionate about. And what I became fascinated by was the human performance side of motorsport in particular. And of course, all sports focus on human performance and decoding that. But obviously for me, it was motorsport in order to be able to stay on the track. So today I run a company in London, which is all about how motorsports can impact leadership. And one of the things that I'm equally passionate about as well is leveling the playing field for women to be in the sport. And also how motorsports has a huge impact on sustainability that, if you're not in the ecosystem and you're not an avid fan, you probably wouldn't realize just how big that impact is. And so both Lina and I are, work quite closely with, communities that are really in the STEM sort of initiatives. And as Lina said, working with Nico Rosberg, I'm sure you must be involved in some incredible sustainable initiatives. So let's dive, straight into it. The community is becoming much more committed to creating a sustainable and responsible model. Obviously, it's a global sport. You have more than 1 billion people watching just Formula One alone. And so it has a huge impact, not only in its reach, but of course on the environment as well. So Lina, give us, give our audience a few examples of these initiatives and how might they affect the SDGs?
I mean, I think I felt very reminded by the previous panel on space.
If we could have some silence at the end of the room, please. If you have conversations, please, if you don't mind taking them to the dedicated networking room for that. Thank you. Sorry to cut you off, Lina.
Yeah, Farah, I think I felt quite reminded of motorsport when I heard the panel on space and on a certain misconception of that industry and technology not contributing or not being able to contribute to sustainability matters. And a few people probably not familiar with motorsport would think that motorsport has an impact on future-proof technologies. So just to give you a few examples, Formula One, for example, from the past 70 years, has done massive contributions to making our road cars more efficient by bringing in, you know, for example, hybrid compact engines or bringing in technologies such as brake technology, KERS, kinetic and energy recovery systems, developing tires that are sustaining, you know, different environments. All of these really, really massive steps in innovation have contributed to making our cars that we drive every day more efficient. For example, the catalytic converter was first used in Formula One before it was then widely used in road cars. And I'm not just saying that to give motorsport a certain spin, you know, as would be my job as a PR person, but I'm also saying this because few people, when they hear Formula One or motorsport, you know, think of, you know, the wider impact of that sport as a technology platform and a development platform for different industries. And I'm not just talking about the car industry, but also different other industries and branches using that technology, for example, to, you know, apply it, for example, the medical industry. I think there was a very good example when COVID hit the world in 2020 and in Great Britain, as pretty much everywhere, there was a scarcity of medical equipment. And Formula One engineers came together to develop a ventilator machine to help hospitals with treating COVID patients. And they did that within a split second, which would take, you know, a lot of industries years. And that is because Formula One in particular has, you know, some of the most forward-thinking, innovative and dynamic engineers in the world. And they have always been able to push the boundaries of industry standards. And I think this is the mindset that we need within the wider industry to make that change towards a more sustainable economy. You know, to say, you know, it's not enough to go and push the edge. We have to go and push boundaries, become better, constantly improve, and, you know, apply all of those learnings to wider industries.
Absolutely, and I've had many conversations with people in Formula One who have all commented on how if only the governments handled the pandemic like how Formula One teams did, because it was one of the first sports to come back and be able to operate in a safe manner, given that it's in 22 countries around the world. And when drivers got COVID, they managed to, you know, handle the situation. So you mentioned, you know, it can impact, okay, not only just healthcare, but what other industries, you know, do we see the technologies that are pushed to the absolute limit on the racetrack that then contribute to other industries and ultimately a more healthier planet?
I want to give you an example from the racing series that I'm currently involved with, Extreme E. It's a racing series that was entirely built on the, you know, battling climate change and, you know, making the wider fan base aware of climate issues in remote areas. It sounds like a contradiction, and at first, I admit, when I heard about it, I was like, you know, well, how do, you know, racing electric SUVs in remote environments, how does that help the planet? But with the purpose of trying to show how, what an impact, you know, climate change has on remote areas and the communities there, and by actively supporting people on the ground with projects, with initiatives and everything, we have managed to actually reach the traditional motorsport target group and make them aware of these issues and also excite them about technologies that are to come. And one is, of course, electric mobility, but also, for example, the electric racing cars in Extreme E are charged using solar power and a hydrogen fuel cell, meaning that it's an absolute net zero carbon technology that we race with on the ground, and all the facilities on the ground are charged, not using diesel generators, for example, but using Second Life batteries. And, you know, all of these sort of little steps communicated well and are could contribute to people being more aware of the issue, accepting technologies more, and, you know, becoming more interested generally and involved in such initiatives.
Absolutely. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that, you know, transition of cleaner energy. How does not, of course, Extreme E, but also Formula E and the others, other leagues that we have promote and create that sort of R&D necessary that for other energy companies to then, you know, affect the other industries?
I mean, I think motorsport has the benefit of having a massive followership and a lot of fans around the world. So many partners are getting involved and helping to create that R&D. We're working with partners from the tire industry. We're working with partners from the energy sector. We're working with loads of different research. Extreme E even has its own research lab. So scientists coming with us to the races, conducting research on the ground and, you know, bringing that knowledge with them. And I think that exchange between different industries is something that works quite well on a small scale, just as motorsport, but we are applying that knowledge too. For example, you know, every Formula One team has wind tunnels running, and while they use a lot of energy, we're also renting those out to other industries who use them to conduct research on aerodynamic purposes, and that then goes, that knowledge goes into, for example, airplanes or, you know, ship and all those kind of things. You know, and speaking of Formula One and, you know, developing new powertrains, of course, there is a disruption here because we're speaking of a sort of old era where big engines were acceptable and where it was okay to kind of focus on the entertainment and sportive and competitive angle of the sport. But I think now they are committed to, you know, making a change and becoming carbon neutral by 2030. They are working on developing sustainable fuel alternatives. And those then can be used, for example, for air freight or for logistics and ships. And this is something that is also benefiting other industries.
Yeah, and even space, as we were talking, yeah, that both industries work very closely together. And so what are the challenges in sustainability for motorsport?
I think the biggest challenge is one that we share with many other industries. If you look at the emissions caused by Formula One, for example, you have under 1% are coming from the power units, you know, used on the race circuits, whereas a lot of people think this is the issue. Cars driving around in a circle, they are causing emissions. But of course, this is nothing against the amount of cars on the road out there. Over 70% of emissions caused by Formula One are coming from air freight and logistics of parts and people and fans traveling to those races. And this is something that is a shared problem across pretty much every industry, but not only Formula One, but also other sports. And wanting to find, well, we want to find solutions, and I think Formula One, for example, is in a good position of being able to conduct research and bring solutions to the table, also by creating more efficient movement planning. This is something that is super important when you're shipping stuff around, that you're thinking about if you can make it bulk, or, you know, moving every part around like that was the case until a few years ago. So these logistical planning tools are also developed in motorsports and then, you know, used in other industries, for example.
And perhaps one of the, you know, the barriers is the mindset, right? Because as you've mentioned, it's the shift of mindset. It's what people don't see behind closed, yeah, doors that really don't realize just how this ecosystem operates. So how have they been able to turn these ESG standards into a top level priority?
I think the biggest challenge for motorsports in general is to tap into that same potential of existing petrol head motorsport fans and take them with us into the future. So, you know, give them that passion and excitement that they know from, you know, motorsports before, and take them with us so that they will follow, for example, our values in terms of promoting gender equality, social causes, you know, sustainable alternatives to those fuel engines and all these kind of technologies that are needed to make that step forward. This is a comms perspective. We need to be able to bring up storytelling that is exciting and that, you know, makes people want to follow motorsport and want to go with us for that step. But I think we are also tapping into a new potential of target groups that is coming to get excited about motorsport for other reasons. You know, we are working with so many different initiatives, and when we look at Extreme E, for example, having women and men race together as the first racing series, this is a massive step that we've taken. And I think this has grown the female fan base enormously and also showed women that, you know, they can take that step. There is so much more interest now from girl drivers to become involved in motorsport, and they see, you know, these girls have made it. They are on the podium. They can win. They are just as good as the men, and they're daredevils. I mean, if you ever get to watch an Extreme E race, do so, because it really is tough racing. It really is something where you can see that these drivers, they're not shedding tears when they're driving over rocks and stuff. And it's just something that personally gives me a lot of hope that we can use that enormous platform going forward to convey valuable messages and do so with partners that we have brought on board. Arctic Base Camp was one of our partners when we had a race in Greenland. So yeah, this is something that is quite cool.
Yeah, and let's go a bit deeper into this topic of equality, because it is, of course, an SDG about gender equality. And what have been, you know, the barriers to getting more women into motorsport? Is it mindset? Is it money? Is it both? What?
I mean, I can tell you from my personal experience, when I started in motorsport 15 years ago, I mean, I was told by my first boss that women don't belong on a racetrack. So I would stay back in the office while the guys would go to the racetrack. I was, you know, trying to get into the job and super interested. And, you know, when they came back, they sort of handed me their bag with the closing, track closing, and said, well, you can get this washed. I was like, what? Well, this is the mindset that's changed 15 years on, and we have those women drivers, and they are competing against men, and they have equal opportunity. It's a first step. We don't have grid girls anymore now. We just sort of focus on various people who want to get involved and promote the sport, not just girls in bikinis. And, you know, these are small steps, and I think when you speak to our drivers, female drivers, you'll hear more of these stories where they came into motorsport and there was just simply no overalls made for women. So they would have to fit into the male overalls, which were too big, and, you know, this is a disadvantage and all these kind of things. You probably have your own stories and your own experiences from, you know, your time in motorsport, and I think there's just so much more that we can do going forward in helping girls, you know, have that confidence of, you know, pursuing a career in motorsport, not just as drivers, but also, you know, as engineers, as team leaders. And, you know, people like Susie Wolf have done a lot for, I think, women in motorsport, because she's a team chef and she's doing, you know, that job as a boss brilliantly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm actually a volunteer for Susie's initiative of what was called Dare to be Different, but now is acquired by the FIA and is called Girls on Track. And for anyone who doesn't know what they do is they really go into that grassroots level and they go to schools from all sorts of ages, from, you know, 7, 8 years old, where you need to start when you're, if you're thinking about a career in motorsports as a driver, all the way up to sort of 16 years old. And they, you know, they bring in the lady that might have been working on the wind tunnel for the Mercedes F1 team to showcase that, you know, there's a career path in that. And there's so many different aspects. There's medical, there's PR, there's, you know, cuisine. There's so many different aspects, right? Motorsports is a business. And every aspect of business comes together to really, you know, operate in the level that they do, and it's the best of the best. But, you know, and then having people like that champion the cause is extremely important, because if she wasn't doing it, nobody else was. Yeah. And up until now, I think they've touched more than 30,000 school children, which is, you know, phenomenal achievement. And then in a similar vein, obviously W Series as well, which in such a short space of time, they launched 1 year before the pandemic, has now got, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is the new team principal, you know, has Jamie Chadwick, and most importantly has created this partnership with F1, which, you know, that is a huge step. And to be able to achieve that, you know, during a pandemic, you know, is absolutely amazing. So, you know, you're coming from a PR background, and I'm sure, you know, we can agree that, you know, motorsports is quite exciting to communicate a message from. So how do you think the industry is really working to communicate this effort? Because, you know, a few years ago, before F1 got acquired by Liberty Group, Liberty Media Group, you know, there wasn't this much heightened awareness about it. And Formula E was designed with sustainability at its core. So everything was designed on how can it be sustainable rather than fix the problem later. So from a PR perspective, you know, what is the actual communication through this?
I think you can see some new trends in you know, trying to bring an interactive communication tool into motorsport. You can see that from Formula E, where, you know, people at home can actually vote for the drivers. You can see it in Extreme E, where we don't have any spectators at the racetrack, which is part of our efforts to be sustainable, because logistics and fans traveling to the racetracks would cause emissions. So there is no audience at the racetrack. People are watching from home. This means that you have to be much more creative with picking those people up and showing them what's going on and involving them in the action. Most of it is done through social media, of course, and the drivers play a crucial role, as you can also see from Formula One. I mean, lots of initiatives in Formula One are sort of being conveyed messages by the drivers. If you think of Lewis Hamilton bringing in that Black Lives Matter and, you know, more diversity and things like that, the Hamilton Commission talking about, you know, how, you know, they can promote more black people in motorsport. And, you know, the same applies to many different aspects. I think Sebastian Vettel was seen last at Miami Grand Prix with a shirt saying, you know, Miami Grand Prix 2050 no longer, or underwater or something, because, you know, he wanted to raise awareness for the effects of climate change on countries like Florida. And I think this is something that is helping. The drivers have a lot of following, not Nico as well. Nico Rosberg has become probably the most advert ambassador of sustainability across probably all drivers. We use this tool, of course, because he's got a voice. He's getting involved with lots of different initiatives, such as when a Sports for Climate Action and Cristina Figueres' Count Us In campaign, which has also been joined by Extreme E themselves. So we are sort of a hub to connect the industries, the OEMs, car manufacturers, different sponsors and partners with NGOs, with, you know, different projects and initiatives around the world. And the storytelling then is a new aspect to motorsport. For example, we planted mangrove trees in Senegal at our last race with Extreme E, or we helped Saudi Arabian women who are into traditional crafts and artisanship to commercialize their art by, you know, giving them cameras and video equipments and coaching together with one of our partners. And this is a new initiative for those partners, because traditional sponsors in motorsport wouldn't get involved in off-track activities such as this. But it opens up new tools of communication for those partners too. And they think, well, this is cool. I'm not only getting, you know, to speak about competition and about the drivers and about the action. I can only also use this as a platform to, you know, convey a message that we promote gender equality, that we are helping communities who are affected by climate change. And this is, I think, a very powerful tool for communicating, you know, values around SDGs, and doing so to maybe a community that wouldn't naturally get involved with this. Because we here, I think, in Davos, as much as, you know, Christina from the space panel said, it's a bubble preaching to the choir. And that won't help. But if you think about the motorsport community, this is a really powerful new target group to get into, you know, SDGs and all of the matters that, you know, we know are problematic but haven't traditionally been on the minds of someone watching Formula One.
And talking from a perhaps an impact investment perspective, what would you say are the sort of barriers, you know, to that as well, on that note?
You mean motorsport?
Yeah, motorsport initiatives, motorsport companies, drive. I mean, we know drivers is a bit of a longer game to really, and the levels of investment required, of course.
Yeah.
But for companies, you know, from impact investment perspective, what are the barriers?
For finding sponsors, you mean, as teams? I can say that it has become much more difficult. It's always been difficult to find sponsors. And may I use this panel to say, if anyone is interested to sponsor Rosberg X Racing and Extreme E, very welcome, because that new message that we're trying to bring across is way more complex. Motorsport as such was always a complex matter if you talk about technology and about, you know, all of the aspects of competition. But now we are speaking about matters that are highly political, that are very difficult for some of the companies that we're traditionally involved with to take on and bring across. So it takes much more, I'd say, stamina, and also some companies who really want to go and help bring things forward, get involved with those projects that we support on the ground, get involved with finding solutions, not just, you know, give us money to put a sticker on the car. Because in this age and time, I think this is no longer the way to go for sponsorship anyway. I think sponsoring a team and then becoming involved in initiatives that support people that are affected by climate change, that supports social and gender initiatives, all of these things require much more input than money. And as Lance said, it's not about the money. So when you think about impact investing, that's just a single aspect. But you need the manpower and, you know, the people, the passion to come on board and properly work with us. And this is something that I think Nico has a team of 20 people who work with me. All of us are working within a very, very, let's say, passionate and almost family-like network of people. It reminds me very much of what Lana set up. All of those people really want to do good, really want to help, want to step forward. And within that mindset, it's not only about commercial aspects, which makes sponsorship and investing more difficult.
Well, talking about that, I have to ask you. You work with a, you know, a former Formula One driver. How has he pushed you to be, you know, to unlock your human performance?
Well, I think it helped that we were both at a stage of our career when we met, where we both wanted to give our career a more purposeful twist, so to speak. And coming from the same background helped us to understand each other. So that was really an aspect that helped me a lot. And him as a person, I learned so much from him, because I can clearly say that whatever he's doing is done out of having values. And some of them are, you know, quite traditional in terms of family being the most important thing for him and not, you know, his career. He ended his, you know, Formula One career at the height of his potential as a world champion. And he did so for the sole purpose of focusing on something that was less ego-driven and helping others more, helping society, helping the climate and the planet, because he had just had two children. And his daughter sort of opened his eyes, and I think he's doing that with us as a team. We have a very young team, so a lot of us are already sort of in the space. But, you know, they also came to Nico to be involved in motorsport, and, you know, now we're twisting and we're pivoting our purpose, and I think it helps us all to see, yeah, there is something else than just making money, and we can come together and create something very, very powerful with his voice.
Fantastic. I'm sure it must be such an incredible honor and inspiring day-to-day working with him.
I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed having these conversations. If you want to grab a copy of today's show notes, then head over to missionmakers.com/Davos, where you'll also find notes from all of our previous episodes. If you're interested in talking to me about future opportunities at Davos, producing podcasts, or coming down to some of my music and motorsports events, then you can reach out to me at missionmakers or at dj.n1nja on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thank you as ever for listening. Until next time, keep it laser focused.